Week one, federal election campaign is on. Welcome to NITV Radio. John Fain, former ABC host. Welcome. Who's your mob and where are you from?
Hi, Kerry Lee. I'm a white fella and I have some Indigenous family. So my eldest son, who's my stepson, is Bundjalung, and we have Bundjalung family, and it's enriched my life to get to know them and their stories. So it's great to be here with you on this network.
Lovely to have you with us today, and I'm very happy that you'll be joining us for the next 5 weeks during this federal election campaign for a weekly wrap-up of events and a focus on First Nations issues and events that happen throughout the week. Now, John, day three of the campaign, where are we at?
They fired the starting gun. The Prime Minister gets to choose the timing of an election under our system, and they do it when they think it's to their advantage to go. It's fairly late in the cycle. There was only 1 week later when the election could have been called, but all of that's ancient history now. On day three, week one, the Labor Party undoubtedly have got a bit of wind in their sails. There's two polls that have been published on the morning that we're speaking to each other on this day three, Monday morning. They both have the Labor Party staging a remarkable turnaround, because only a few months ago it was looking pretty grim for them, and Mr. Dutton was well ahead in the opinion polls. Now, opinion polls are just, you know, they're just one measure of things. They don't mean a lot, and sometimes they're just plain wrong. But on the trend, and when you've got several polls and they're all using different methods, but they all come up with at the moment the same sort of thing, which is that the Labor Party have edged in front. And it would seem to be that you can say that Mr. Albanese is better at campaigning, perhaps, than he is sometimes at governing, because over the last few years, his standing in the polls has been poor, but as an election comes around, it's suddenly picked up. So there's a fair bit of commentary on whether Mr. Dutton and the Liberal, the Conservative coalition, whether or not they've peaked too early, and they're going to be very much looking in the entrails. They're going to be staring deep into this poll and going, oh dear, what do we do to get some momentum back? It's going to be really interesting to see. Early days as it is.
Now to my next question, John Fain. Let's talk about the different political parties and what they have on the offer.
Okay, so we've always had in Australia what's called a duopoly. We've had two big political groups. On the left of the centre, the more progressive side of politics, the Labor Party, based on the trade union movement historically, but it's moved on since then. On the other side, you've got a coalition of conservative parties, the Liberal Party and the National Party, which is a rural-based party, but also heavily now involved in mining and the mining influence, the influence of mining companies. So you've got these two big groupings, but as this election is going to prove, they're not as dominant as they used to be, as they've always been. In fact, this election is going to signify in many people's minds the end of the duopoly, the two big parties. So their votes at the moment are at very low levels, according to the opinion polls. And instead, we've now got this significant number of what are called the crossbench, people in the middle, who can, they're independents or they're green or they're minor parties that have one or two members or even just one person named after the, usually the personality. You know, we're all used to Pauline Hanson being a fixture in Australian politics, and she's now in the upper house, the Senate, the one that doesn't decide on government. Government's decided in what's called the House of Representatives. So you can have a majority and you can be the government because you've got control of the House of Representatives, but you almost, very rarely, almost never have control of the upper house, the Senate, at the same time. So what we've got is all these what are called independents and crossbenchers. And in fact, I think it's fair to assume, based on all the polls we've had now for about a year, that neither of the parties will be able to govern. It's unlikely that they'll be able to govern entirely on their own. They're going to need some support from that middle grouping, the crossbench, who can go either way on different issues, depending on how they see the particular policy they're being asked to support or reject. So we're going to see different groupings, and we might see people needing to form alliances to run the country. It's going to be really interesting. Most countries, most democracies work that way. Most countries don't have the big parties that we have. So whether it's New Zealand or all sorts of other European countries, they form alliances to get government and to form a stable government across the parliamentary benches. So it looks like we're heading that way. But again, everything can change.
What are some of the key election issues for mob around Australia?
Well, that's a hard question to answer because they're such a varied community. Mob is so different. I mean, you know, what affects people in far north Queensland or the Kimberley might be completely different to people in urban Sydney or Brisbane or Melbourne. But let's try and look across the overall. I think for Indigenous and First Nations Australians and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, I think the really key thing is going to be whether the loss of the referendum on The Voice is motivating them to get more involved in politics or the other way around, putting them off and feeling, well, I didn't like how that went. I'm disappointed. So you can take your election and do what you like with it. Don't want to get rude here. But so nobody knows how that's going to play. Nobody knows whether in large numbers First Nations people are going to embrace the election process, having had a taste of it. A lot of people enrolled only for The Voice. They'd never participated in politics before. So having done it once, does that mean they've got an appetite for more political engagement, or does it mean they feel a bit, well, I'm disappointed, I didn't like that result, so I'm not going to do it again? We don't know. In terms of issues, cost of living, they're the three main issues, as they are for people in suburban Australia, and even people who earn quite good wages. One of the features of the economy at the moment is that you can have a good job, be earning good money. You can even be in a two-income household with a good wages, and still be struggling or feeling like you're struggling because things are costing so much. When you get to remote and rural Australia, where you pay ridiculous amounts of money for food and vegetables and fuel, the cost of living is magnified as an issue for your community. So it's cost of living. And governments have only got, there's only that much they can do, but they're desperately competing with each other, both Mr. Dutton and Mr. Albanese, to say, I'm the better one to deal with this. I'll take on the supermarkets. I'll deal with the fuel companies, whatever else it might be. So we're going to see a really interesting thing is going to be whether the interest rates come back down. And they have. We've had one cut of interest rates. We might even see another during an election campaign. It's happened every now and again. That's going to be interesting. After cost of living in the economy, the next thing is always jobs, job creation. And this is where the Coalition have announced they're going to cut the public service. I think for a lot of people in Indigenous communities who depend on a lot of government services because of the, generations of disadvantage and trying to bridge the gap, close the gap, that will be something that's really important in Indigenous communities. If you cut public services, how do you do that without impacting on what people depend upon those public servants to deliver? So that's going to be interesting. And you might have heard the Prime Minister's already on the attack saying you can't cut 40,000 public servants without impacting on Veterans Affairs, for instance, or you'll have another robo-debt, was the hint he dropped on ABC TV on Sunday morning. You're going to end up with more government disasters like the ones we've only really just started to understand last time round, which was where people were told they owed the government money, even if they didn't. And a lot of people were devastated to be told they owed the government money and they had their Centrelink payments or their pensions cut over debts that in fact didn't exist. So we don't want to go through all that again. So we're going to see what happens there. The other big one that's a bit of a sleeper, Peter Dutton is a big fan of nuclear power. Now, because of AUKUS, the new submarines that are decades away, but we've committed to and made an $800 million payment, down payment, a deposit on it with America, because, everyone thinks there's global tensions and China's a bit more threatening than it was a few years ago. So we've gone and bought these incredibly expensive submarines. They're nuclear powered and they'll be nuclear armed. So the big question is, do we also have nuclear power generation, nuclear power stations in Australia, so we can phase out coal and not be dependent on gas? So if that is a policy that people embrace, Mr. Dutton will get extra support for it. If it's a policy people are uncomfortable with, then that'll penalise the vote for the Liberal Party. People will say, no, I don't want to go down that path, and they'll vote against that option, in which case the Coalition will find that that's a policy that really is not popular. We still don't really know whether nuclear is popular or unpopular. So I think those are the big issues. There's always the others. Medicare, the Labor Party's trying to make a big thing about health insurance and Medicare, and whether or not that there's any campaign to take away some of the free medicine and free hospital care and so on that we get. And then immigration, which is always a bit of an issue in some parts of Australia, and Donald Trump. You just can't talk about politics anywhere in the world at the moment without the Trumpster getting a bit of a look in.
And can you just touch on immigration for a moment for us, please, John?
Sure. So immigration numbers plummeted during COVID, during the pandemic, because the borders were closed. We are a country that's still growing, unlike some other countries that are shrinking, like Japan, where the population's decreasing. China's population is decreasing. Ours is growing. And we need it. Anyone who's got a family member in aged care, or who's looking for childcare, or someone who's looking for truck drivers for their business, there's a shortage in a whole lot of areas of labour. And the only way we meet that shortage is by bringing workers in. And immigration keeps Australia's economy going. You go to hospital, a lot of the nurses are from overseas and so on. During COVID, we had a couple of years with no immigration. So post-COVID, there were labour shortages, and the government then boosted immigration to bring more people in quickly to fill some of those jobs. That's led to a housing crisis because there's not enough houses for all those extra people to live in. So we're kind of chasing our tail here. The coalition say we'll cut immigration. The Labor Party say we're more cautious because if we do that, we'll have labor shortages and the economy's in trouble again.
Now to my next question, and it's a big one for our mob, John. The 2023 referendum, as we know, was defeated for the Albanese government. How do you think the voice may play out during this election?
Well, I think it's probably how it's going to play out for Indigenous voters is just as significant as how it might play out in some of those inner city electorates where the voice was a really big issue. So whether or not Indigenous voters shy away from elections because they're disappointed, as we've already said, or whether that in fact has given them an appetite for it is one aspect. The other is the effect it has on the battle for a lot of those white voters and middle-class people who supported the voice in urban Australia. And that's a battle between Greens and Labor candidates. And we've got some really interesting contests in the inner city of Brisbane, Sydney, and Melbourne in particular, where there are contests not between the coalition and Labor, but between Labor and Greens. So the voice is going to be a factor there, as will Gaza. So the Gaza issue has attracted some people who are very upset about the war in Gaza, and it's attracted some people who support Israel to the coalition, but it's also attracted some people who are pro-Palestinian to the Greens, who have got a very different position on Gaza, to the Labor Party. Now, obviously, Australians of an ethnic background that's either Jewish or Muslim and Arab will be in some ways influenced accordingly in their voting on that Middle Eastern issue. But of course, for 95% of Australians, it's not front of mind, as it is for people who have an emotional connection to it. But in some of those tight inner city contests, that might be a deciding factor. We just don't yet know.
John Fain, former ABC host, thank you so much for your insights and your expertise on the federal election campaign thus far and what we're expected to see over coming weeks. Thank you for your time today.
Can't wait for the next one, Kerry Lee.